Welcome to the One Right Church podcast, where we will discuss what it's like to believe that you attend the only right church. My name is Mark Shaw, and I spent the first 45 years of my life in the Followers of Christ Church in Oregon City, believing I was in the One Right Church. Our hope is that by simply sharing our story, that we would urge people to look to the Bible for answers instead of their religious traditions. We want to encourage people to trust in Jesus for their salvation and not in attending the One Right Church. Let's get started.
Well, hello, this is Scott Reevely, and I'm here with Mark Shaw, and we are excited to be talking to you again with the One Right Church podcast. This is going to be our second episode talking about shame, and we think that that's a pretty important topic because all the psychotherapy we do for each other here in the podcast studio kind of reveals that we both ran into it a lot when we were younger. But so welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And shoes on the other foot.
I know.
It feels weird, doesn't it?
What do you say in response? No, I do think, for me, this has been interesting just to think about and look into, because I don't think I recognized that shame was a big part of my life when I was younger, especially, and I'm really kind of coming to grips with it now. And
well, that's one of the things about it, is it's invisible.
Yeah.
And you can't see it. You feel it, but you don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And so it's not like you would have a label on it, or you'd be able to look around like a classroom when you're a kid and say, that's a person's got shame, that person's ashamed, that person's ashamed. You can't do that. I mean, you could just assume they're all ashamed, but then you wouldn't be wrong. But that's not really how it works, because it is invisible.
Yeah, and I don't think I would have considered myself someone who was struggling with it when I was younger, but it's just...
Okay, yeah. So what is it that makes you like admit it now?
Well, I think some of it is the freedom to be able to admit it now, but a lot of it in Christ, I just have a different identity now than I did before. But before, I think what people thought of me was so important that I just didn't realize how important until I really looked back. And
that's one of the reasons you couldn't have admitted it before either.
Yeah,
was
sure.
Because that would have sent some signals or you know, flares up, and people would have noticed, and then it'd have been a problem.
Right.
Interesting. Mm. So how did, you know, what did happen, and what kinds of things did you experience that you would say were related to shame?
Well, like I said, the biggest thing is whether I like to admit it or not, I've just always been concerned with what people think of me. And I really think that's, like a lot of things we talked about, I don't think this only happens at Followers. I think this happens everywhere. But there was such a pressure to conform there that I thought fitting in with this group meant that God was happy with me. If the group was happy with me, God is happy with me. If the group is unhappy with me, God is unhappy with me. So,
that's a kind of a big jump.
That was intense.
Interesting.
But not if you're at the One Right Church.
Well, so in some respect, so this is the thing that I guess that I've been thinking about, is that shame comes from trying to manage other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you manage your parents, so you don't want to get in trouble, or your dad, you know, flies off the handle or something, so you, like, lay low and don't make a fuss.
Yeah.
You're acting completely in response to somebody else.
Right.
And, you know, so you said you were doing that with other people, but then you said you were doing that in some respect to manage God himself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think...
Oh, my goodness.
I think I didn't know it at the time, but I was just...
Yeah, you'd never call it that.
Yeah, no, I never would have said that at the time, but I... and it's a performance-based thing, too, again. Like, you have to perform to please people, you have to perform to please God. When I didn't perform, then I would resort to lying. I wanted to cover up
my lack of performance with whatever I had to say to get people to think I was a good person, even though I was doing bad things.
Mm-hmm.
It just leads to all kinds of things. To try and protect your reputation, you tell lies, which gives you a worse reputation, which just piles on. It's just a never ending.
Well, it is, and I think, you know, I think it's a, again, I really like the idea, and it really helped me, of managing other people, managing how they think about me.
Yeah.
And I would say that probably if you're managing how other people think of you, then you are living a shame-based life.
Yeah.
Because you're not really acting out of who you are. You're acting out of your reflection that you hope you'll get back from other people.
Right.
And then that's what you said you were doing with God himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you knew exactly, I imagine, what would get good responses and what would get bad responses. I mean, was there a playbook or something that you knew exactly what to do?
I mean, nothing written down, nothing formal, but I think I was very aware of what would be pleasing to people and what wouldn't be. I was very aware of what people were like approved to hang around and which people were not approved to hang around, even within our group.
Like approved by whom?
The group, the right people, the people I wanted to manage well.
Okay. Like, and the group. Well, we'll have to talk about that another time.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that next time. But yes, that's interesting.
Yeah. So I got really, really good. You talk about managing people. I got really good, really observant about, like, even listening in conversations, what people would say that would get a good reaction and what people would say that would get a bad reaction. And I would make sure not to make that mistake in a different circle. And it's a lot of work to do this.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
How did that, I mean, a lot of pressure too, right? I mean, you're always on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so how did that pressure and workload affect you?
Well, that's a good. I think, again, it's exhausting. Like I said, you have to always be on. You have to not just say and do the right things, but be around the right people. So, I just thought of this, but there's a lot of like social climbing, changing friend groups, like you're moving up to the next level or whatever. Or if this guy that I've been friends with is saying the wrong thing, I can't be associated with him anymore. I've got to go do this other thing.
It's like you're living in a video game or something, trying to level up.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But that's also frowned upon. Like, If you're constantly working to level up, you don't want to see other people doing that because it makes it harder for you. And you want to point out that that person's a people pleaser over there, because if I'm pointing out that you are, then no, you're not going to suspect me for being one. It's just, there's so much manipulation. And
well, I'm suspecting you now after all these things you're telling me here, that's for sure.
It's not good. It's not a good way to live.
Was there, can you give any specific examples of how this kind of thing, I mean, posturing or trying to level up, I mean, that's, I don't know, it doesn't really relate to a video game problem.
Right,
I mean,
right.
What kinds of things did you run into?
That I would try to do, specific things I'd try to do to, like, posture, improve my position or something?
Well, or, you know, keep people from looking down on you or whatever it was you were doing, how you were managing the shame.
Yeah. I think it was always, I was always concerned about doing things that would give me a good reputation. If somebody was going to have their house re-roofed, I was going to make sure I was there. I was going to make sure people knew that I was there. I was going to... I took care of the cemetery for a while. I took care of the choosing your grave sites. So every time there was a death, I was at that person's house. That was a service that needed to be done, and I was able to do it, and I was happy to do it. But it also, I had several people, like I knew that elevated me in some people's eyes just a little bit.
It was a strategic move as well as a helpful move.
It certainly didn't hurt, yeah.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, yeah it's...
I'm getting exhausted just listening to you talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, because one of the things we talked about, I think we mentioned Brené Brown last time we were on here, but she, you know, she distinguishes between guilt and shame in this way. She suggests that guilt is I did something bad, and it's a matter of what I have done. And she says shame is the intensely painful feeling that we're unworthy of love and belonging. So that you're always kind of jockeying to be loved or to belong,
yeah.
Which is exactly what you've described.
Yeah.
And so in order to be worthy of love and worthy of belonging, you had to work pretty hard at it, sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it ties right in with the fact that we believed in a works-based salvation. I think these are connected. I think that I got the idea that, okay, I've done these bad things. I am a bad person because I've done these bad things. So I've got to do enough now to make up for these bad things that I've done and then earn people's respect and build that good reputation. And it's just exhausting. And really, I don't think you ever really lose that feeling that you are a bad person when you're defining it by how many good things you've done and how many bad things you've done.
Well, this is the thing. There's always going to be somebody who doesn't think you're a great person.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that happens all the time. And the more people you know, the more people are going to be like that.
Yeah.
And when that happens, then you're, you know, back kind of at the bottom.
Yeah.
Working your way up again, it seems like.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I mean, I wanted to talk about this, I think, because I listened to a book about it. Mm-hmm. But was there any time when you began to see this more clearly and realize this is maybe not how it should be?
Yeah. I think that I got to a point where I was feeling bad about doing this now. Like this just became more shame. Like now I really am. I knew in my heart, I'm just trying to please people. I'm still.
Oh, so you're doing the things that you knew you should do and you're feeling bad about them.
Yeah. Now I'm feeling bad about the reason I'm doing it. I wasn't doing them for all the right reasons. And so I was feeling bad about that. And you just can't win this game.
Okay, I'm just going to say it, Mark.
Yeah.
You are messed up.
If the people listening to this podcast haven't figured that out by now, that's not a surprise to anybody, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you're not more messed up than other people. You just happen to have just admitted it, and other people haven't come to grips with it yet.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, and I'm unwilling to, like, say that, probably.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
I started out at the beginning of this talking about that I'm willing to talk about this because I feel like because of Jesus, I have the freedom to talk about this now. And this isn't my identity anymore. And I don't have to feel shame about those things. Those aren't who I am now. Those are things I did. Those are things that I did, but that's not who I am now.
Oh, that's a good distinction, I think. But again, the guilt-shame distinction, you were guilty of doing those things.
Yep.
You admit them even on the podcast here,
yeah.
But they don't define you any longer
because
you have a new identity. Now, tell us a little bit about how that came about for you.
Yeah. I've told the story, and I'll tell the abridged version here, but I really believed that when my daughter was expecting our first grandchild that that we were going to have a healthy grandchild because I had done all these good things. And God was probably pleased with me because I felt like I was in good standing in the church. And then she started to have trouble. And then I just had this strong realization that, why would God be pleased with me? Like, I'm not a good person. I just had this feeling of, like, and then to me that meant, then I'm not going to get this bless. God's not going to bless me because I'm a bad person. And went into the bathroom and had a discussion with the Lord and just cried out and said, I don't know what to do now. And 5 minutes later, our granddaughter was born, and it just shook me. I didn't understand why I would be blessed when I was a bad person. And I think God just gave me a first person experience of his grace, that like his unmerited favor.
That shame didn't work the way that it normally worked in this instance.
Right.
And really that's sort of the interception. It was intercepted by grace, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Grace came in, and then I noticed that it really changed everything in my life. I started caring more about what was right than what people thought for the first time in my life. And it was I was very aware of that difference. Like I'm looking around and I'm coming to disagreements with people at church that I know would have been, this is going to hurt my reputation, but I can't just give in to it anymore like I would have before. And
so you felt you had to change, even though you hadn't, there'd been some sort of adjustment, internal adjustment on your part.
Yeah, I felt like I had been changed. I didn't feel like I had to change.
Right.
I just felt like I had been changed. And
so you had to not go down that shame rabbit hole anymore.
Yeah. I didn't have the desire to anymore.
Interesting.
That wasn't what I cared about anymore. I wanted to know more about this God who had shown me his grace. And I just knew that it didn't have anything to do with my reputation with the people around me anymore. So,
wow. That's a really strong statement.
Yeah.
You know, and I shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in the Bible, it does talk about how Jesus really treats our shame. I mean, one of the clearest verses is in Romans chapter 9, and it quotes the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And it says, "Behold, I'm laying in Zion a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense." And this is one of the most quoted verses in the mm-hmm. Bible, one of the most quoted verses in the New Testament that is from the Old Testament, and just over and over use the same verse. And it's talking about Jesus, and he understands himself to cause people to stumble and cause people to be offended. And, you know, even in some respect, the shame that you're talking about, or the being outcast or being mm-hmm. rejected, is what it's talking about here, that Jesus was rejected.
Yeah.
And then it says, whoever believes in him will not be put to shame.
Yeah.
In other words, your belief in Jesus then is what freed you from the pressure of this shame.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to come across like I don't care what anybody thinks of me anymore or anything like that. I don't want to be fake about this. Those things are still there, but when it comes right down to it, I knew that trusting in Jesus and following him was more important than what people thought. That's all I mean.
Sure,
by that.
Being there and being ultimate are two different things.
Yeah,
I mean the fact that it's there and you're aware, and it's in some respect to be able to, you know, read people and understand, read a room and know what's happening and feel those things, that's it. In some respect, that's a gift. But if that gift is ultimate, then it's destructive and will blow you up for sure. So, another verse that this made me think of, it just is 2 Timothy 1:12 says, "I am not ashamed, for I know," and the same reason as before, right? "I know, but I," let me start again. But I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that he is able to guard until that day what has been entrusted to me. Yeah. And I'm not ashamed because I know that I will not be cast out by God.
Yeah.
In that the very thing that you were worried about,
yeah,
you know, when you were expecting your grandchild,
yeah,
is the very thing that you are now confident will never happen to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course you're going to, that's going to really change your outlook.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just you bringing up that verse reminds me of Romans 8. It says, "For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord." So, yes, I was guilty of doing all those things, and even that is not able to separate me from his love. And, yeah, I will always be grateful for him showing me that. And then I agree with Paul, what he wrote to Timothy there, that I just trust that. So,
well, good. I mean, part of when we talk about Jesus, this is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. This sort of radical love and radical acceptance and radical, you know, non-shame, you might say. And some of it is because Jesus himself went through that shame. I mentioned this before, that he was a stone of stumbling, a rock of offense, but Hebrews 12 says, "Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame,
yeah,
and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." In other words, he experienced really worse shame than I'll ever experience.
Mm-hmm.
He went through it on the cross, and now is exalted so that I don't have to fear the shame any longer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such good news. Because there's, when we talked about it last time, there is no other way to escape shame other than Jesus. There just isn't.
And if that, you know, if that's the case, then I hope that this is, you know, talking about shame. We're talking about shame,
yeah,
not because we love to talk about it,
yeah,
but because in some respect, it's like the black box,
yeah,
that holds the glorious diamond of the gospel.
Yeah.
And we have it against a black background so that it sparkles in a way,
right,
that's more beautiful. And in some respect, if you know, even as you've described your own sort of journey, you know, toward freedom from shame, just it sparkles in a way that makes me say, you know, I really do need that same good news so that, yeah, I don't have to face that myself.
Yeah, yeah. And the flip side of, I kind of talked about a mix of it. I really, shame will send you two directions, it seems like to me. Shame will send you toward constant effort and people-pleasing to where I went. And the other way that shame will send you is just despair. And I would just encourage people that as desperate as you might feel, as deep as that despair might feel, Jesus is not afraid to come there and grab you from there. That's,
yeah,
that's really,
nothing's going to separate you from his love, not height, but nor depth.
I right.
Not the depth that you feel.
Right.
But you're, yeah, that's great.
And when we read the Gospels, it's often the people who were in despair that Jesus is reaching down to, and it's the people pleasers that he is calling hypocrites. And so it's, I mean, the answer is Jesus, and that's what I would hope that people would see. If there are people feeling shame, whether they recognize it or not, you can be honest with yourself about it, and still Jesus is the answer. So,
right.
Yeah. Well, that verse that you read from, was it 1 Timothy?
Right.
Yeah, that is in a song that we would sing. I think you read the ESV version. I think we might have sung it from the...
It was 2 Timothy.
Oh, was it 2 Timothy? Okay,
yeah.
Okay. But, the song is, "I Know Whom I Have Believed," and it says, "I know not why God's wondrous grace to me he hath made known, nor why unworthy Christ in love redeemed me for his own. But I know whom I have believed, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed unto him against that day. And sometimes when I read these songs on here, I just can't believe that I sang them for so long, you know. But I mean, that's amazing truth that I sang and didn't know it, and still felt shame and still tried to please people.
Still felt unworthy. See,
still felt unworthy
and didn't recognize that there it was right in front of you.
Yeah. I know not how his saving faith to me he did impart, nor how believing in his word wrought peace within my heart. I know not how the Spirit moves, convincing men of sin, revealing Jesus through the word, creating faith in him. And that's an important part of it too, is revealing Jesus in his word. I mean, we can talk about it here. We want to tell people about him, but he reveals himself in the Bible. Just read the Bible, and Jesus is there, no matter if you've spent your life in despair or pleasing people.
Well, we've talked about this, actually, even with this episode, that we don't just want to talk about shame and, oh, isn't shame bad? And, you know, we feel sorry for whoever experiences it, but really wanted to share the way out in the way of hope.
Yeah.
And, essentially share Jesus with people.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, we'll talk about it. We talked about it as me as an individual this week, and next time we'll talk about shame in a more of a group setting. So,
okay.
All right. Thank you. Well, hopefully this has been helpful. If you have questions or comments or a topic that you would like us to cover, you can reach us at comments@onerightchurch.com. And for more information, you can visit our website, www.onerightchurch.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.